Over the course of 9 years, my father, Stephen, son of Robert and Lillian, memorized over 90 quotes that he recites daily. In each podcast, a quote is randomly picked out of a hat and then discussed. Many of the quotes relate in one way or the other to the Dreams course that Stephen is currently teaching. Welcome to the Dreams Course podcast. I'm Michael, son of Judith and Stephen.
And I'm Stephen, son of Lillian and Robert. All right, well, enough of the details of that, and shall we get going?
Yeah, let's get.
All right, let me pick something. All righty. Life is so astonishing, it leaves little time for anything else. Emily Dickinson. I find that when I first read it and came across it, it just made me laugh.
It is.
I thought it was really funny. You know, it's a storm coming. It's a hurricane coming, and there's no time for anything else.
Life is.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it just moves quickly, and then, wow, it's over. So it's astonishing in that way.
It reminds me of that John Lennon song.
Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans.
Well, let's describe what she actually is probably getting at. Because if she did have more time, what would she be spending that time doing?
Yeah. What is it you're doing when you're forgetting to be alive?
Yeah, and I think it's also she's an artist and a writer and was pretty reclusive. I mean, she wasn't, you know, out dancing every weekend. So therefore, I think she's got to be saying life is so astonishing, you'll get caught up in all the day-to-day stuff. And then for her as an artist, there's no time to write, to reflect on all that's going on. Something like that.
So maybe there's so much life that there's hardly time for life.
And there's a period of time in man's history going back, I don't know, 40, 50, how many thousand years, where there literally was no time. I mean, those drawings in the caves in southern France of primitive man doing primitive art, you know, they found a few seconds in the chaotic world they were living in of thunderstorms and fires and animals trying to kill them, and then some brave soul got up and painted a bear or a bull or something in a cave. But most people's lives are like that. They're too busy, they're too caught up in family and work and all the stuff of life that suddenly they have no other time for reflection. Everyone should have time for reflection, don't you think? I mean, it should be a national day of reflection.
Hell yeah, Dad.
National day of reflection, where you take time out, you just do nothing, and you go, is this what I want to continue doing, or do I want to make changes?
I think that was the best thing that the quarantine offered early on, was collectively everyone just had to sort of hit the brakes. And it allowed a lot of people time to reflect in a way that they probably hadn't in a long time or maybe even in their life.
Yeah, when the quarantine first came out, it was like, for me, like a giant snowstorm where you can't leave the house. There's nothing you can do. So it's not my fault that I'm not out trying to work magic in the world. I can't get out. I must do nothing. I must sit around and reflect all day. Oh my, how horrible is that? There's nothing I can do. I just can't get out in the world and be busy.
And it was your dream come true.
Oh my God. I mean, don't want the virus. Obviously, that was priority one. But priority two was, I am free. I have no obligations to anyone. I'm at a time in my life where I love all the quiet time and making it so that I don't get caught up in the astonishing business of life.
How much did you reflect when you were younger?
I didn't reflect at all. I did reflect. I mean, I've always kept dreams for 50 years.
You've written your dreams down for 50 years?
50 years. And because that was the source of my first writing. I was 21 and I was trying to write and I had absolutely nothing to say. So I said, so it was like one blank page after, well, let's get going today. What should we write about? Okay, I'm 21 and I don't know a lot. And so then I would say, well, that's enough for today. We'll pick it up tomorrow. And what I started to do was writing down my dreams. It was kind of a, well, you see, I am writing. And as it worked out, because I had so little going on in my external life, I was dreaming like 4 to 5 dreams a night. And I would wake up exhausted, but I had something to put into my writing journal. And I'm thankful that I was given, back to Emily, I think gratitude to have the time to reflect is the correct feeling to have, that you have the time to think about things and how you want to proceed and reflect, and so you're making good choices. And she's kind of making fun of that process. My suspicion is she had plenty of time to write, but it's a good line. I was going to ask you a question, actually.
Yeah.
How old were you when you began to reflect? Like, if I began at 21, how old were you?
I wrote.
And don't say.
No, I wrote something down a few years ago.
Yeah.
That it was like a little poem or a little limerick or something like that.
Yeah.
It was, deep in a Target parking lot, a 10-year-old screams, "Fuck my life." He knows nothing of fucking or life, but knows there's got to be something more than the parking lot at Target.
So
I think I did a lot.
Is he working at Target?
I used to, as the youngest child, I used to go out when mom would go on errands. I would go with her, and I would oftentimes elect to sit in the car by myself. Because I was like, I don't want to go into the shop. Like, that's, yeah. You know.
And for mom, being with you is like her little baby. She just wants to take you and go shopping together, and we'll pick out artichokes and see if the watermelon is ripe.
Yeah. And I was like,
come on, I got to get a life.
So I was like, I'll just sit in the car. You know, I'll wait in the car. And then, so I think those early experiences of spending half an hour, 45 minutes sitting in a parking lot were like my earliest childhood memories of reflection.
I'd like to go back and make that early reflection in the parking lot. Why not make it for the story that you, when mom went to Target, then you'd be
well
in
because
the
mom and
lot,
I because mom and I were in a Target when on the announcer on the PA they said, we are currently being robbed at gunpoint, please make your way to the exits.
That actually happened?
Yeah.
Were you inside?
Yeah.
Why hasn't anyone ever told me that story?
And mom and I abandoned our shopping cart and we just left.
Oh, that was a mistake. That's a weapon. Yeah, you could shoot that thing right at the robbers. Now, but I'm still trying to come back to this. If you reflected on this about the parking lot, about the person in parking lot, that could be you. That's
no, of course. That's exactly right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I wrote that probably subconsciously or consciously remembering those early memories of knowing from firsthand experience that I sat in a parking lot as a young boy, knowing that there's got to be more to life than this.
It's a pretty low bar. I mean, if you're saying, right now I'm sitting in a parking lot at Target, how can I make this better? Even if you went down the street and went to a McDonald's, it might be better.
Who knows?
Who knows? All right, another question for you. What age were you when you started to find, and what caused it, starting to find life to be astonishing?
Probably when mom returned from the store and we could finally leave the fucking parking lot. I was like, wow, life is astonishing now. You know, you start to see the scenery change. And then that was doubled down when I did a Knowles course and I went for a 28-day backcountry camping trip in Alaska. And then it was like the natural world was like, oh, let me show you what I can do.
I picked you up at the airport, and I can remember that you were quiet, not the same quiet that you are when you're at a Target parking lot, but a different kind of quiet. And I could tell you'd been altered, you know, changed. You've been moved by that experience. It was so clear. You know, Joseph Campbell talks about following your bliss. When you follow what you're interested in with faith that it will kind of send you the next sign of what to do.
It's like there's a giant pond, right? A completely still pond, a lake, whatever you want to say, a body of water, perfectly still. And these certain sort of pillar events are like big boulders that fall into that body of water and ripple out for decades.
Decades.
You know?
I have dreams that resonate. I had a dream that, in fact, you were in it. It took place, it was in a car in New Mexico, and I was in the car and ended up in the car alone, and I went off the highway into the desert. And what makes that right away when you're following dreams, as soon as you get off the highway, that means you're leaving the normal path of many to carve out your own individuated path.
That's cool.
Yeah, and so then I almost went over a cliff, but was managed to not, which reminds you that being individuated is exciting and can also be, you know, dangerous at times, and it has different elements. It's not for everybody, but I made it through that point, and I got down, and there were all these FBI agents deciding who could go through this gated area, and we finally got through them. They gave us the okay, which I think in the dream world was kind of my inner sanctum. It's almost like my self. It's like I'm getting permission from my inner sanctum to come into it, to experience it, guarded by the FBI. And what was interesting about the place that you went through was a normal looking house, except in the middle was a driveway going through the house. So I have no idea what that meant. But I got there, and I was looking around, and I saw you. It was like at a ranch kind of deal. And I got out of the car, and then I saw you. And you were in the car trying to drive the car. And often, you know, your middle name is Stephen, which is my name. And you are kind of some part of myself, some part of my curiosity or some element of my personality. Not you. We couldn't be further from one another. So you're safe. But so instead of driving, I pulled you out and we began walking. And what was serious about my dreams are when I get out of a car and start walking, those are always signs I'm about to have a big dream. And we started walking. What was interesting was I was on a mission, except I had no idea what the mission was. So we were walking down into this down in a canyon, and we were rushing, and we came suddenly to this completely pristine, beautiful church with one side of the canyon as one wall and the other side of the canyon as the other wall of the church. Wow. There was no way to get around it. And when I went into the church, now I think you're getting into the real true inner sanctum of the self. I'm at the church. And the extraordinary thing was it was empty, no furniture, nothing. And I realized in the dream that this was my church, that this church had been waiting for me to come. But instead of celebrating that, I walked outside and a family was walking up the little road with packed lunches. They were going to have lunch at the church, and they couldn't have been happier, as happy as you can imagine. And I went up to the little boy and said, "Excuse me, but do you know a way to get around this church?" And he took me over to the ground, and there was a big hole, and then below the hole was just darkness. And I woke up with the idea that, do I jump back into the darkness and continue the search for whatever it is, or I do, I realize that at the church I've arrived. I'm at home. It's time to end the search, because I think sometimes people are just are addicted to the search, not to actually arriving at peace or inner goodness and in their being. And it was a choice. And when, and I've been resonating with that dream ever since, that why wouldn't I just stay at the church?
Yeah, I mean, you're there.
But that's the addiction. That's the part of the dream where I didn't know what I was in such a hurry for. And then when it was handed to me, I didn't automatically go fall to my knees in tears and go, I'm home. So that's a dream that, you know, even now as I speak it, it resonates. It makes me think, have I arrived? I think I'm close, much closer to staying at the church now than I was 3 or 4 years ago when I first dreamt it. Always gets back to this perception issue. I think growth is just change of perception.
I would agree. That would be the ultimate superpower.
Yeah, and if you could do it just whenever you felt like it.
I mean, maybe that's what enlightenment is, as an ultimate superpower. It's the ability to perceive everything, an infinite source of perception. So suddenly you have compassion for all sides because you stop seeing sides and start seeing a round ball with infinite sides, and they're all accessible if you just let go of me. Just let go of me, Dad.
Well, okay. I think I'm coming back to finish this. I think what you said is the key word, and that's the word astonishing. And I think in that word in the dream, I mean, in her quote, she basically is celebrating the magic and the majesty of existence. Okay, well, good. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you, Emily Dickinson.
Close your eyes. Have no fear. The monster's gone. He's on the run, and your daddy's here.
The Dreams Course is a one-on-one program done through phone calls with Stephen, using dream interpretation and reading Hermann Hesse's Damien. For more information about the Dreams Course, email Stephen at csmoke@optonline.net. SEASMOKE@OPTONLINE.net. If you liked today's episode, please subscribe to the show and come back for the next episode. We have many, many more quotes to get to. Thank you.